On today's episode of Locked On Nets, Josh Bass talks about Spencer Dinwiddie's stellar performance against the Sacramento Kings, also the private investment vehicle he is trying to create with his contract and the standstill that's creating with the league, and the curious case of Rodion Skurks coming up next.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass, back after a hiatus this week in Miami. Was doing some traveling for my other job. Safe to say that I am not just a podcaster for the Brooklyn Nets, but I do love this team. Of course, my co-host, Marcus Barahal, could not be joining me today. We couldn't make schedules work, so it's going to be a solo pod with me, but better spirits than I think Marcus was earlier this week when he recapped the Indiana game. Nets have a couple wins in a row, most notably last night over the Sacramento Kings, 116-97, probably the cleanest win of the season, or one of them, even though no Kyrie Irving, and he'll miss the next few games as well, and we can get into that. And also no Caris LeVert, who, of course, is going to be sidelined for a longer period of time with his hand injury. So not great news there, but the Nets are getting it done despite being short-staffed. We'll also touch on the Spencer Dinwiddie situation with him trying to turn his contract into an investment vehicle and the kind of potential repercussions of that, as it seems like the NBA is really taking a hardline stance on that, and some really good reporting there by some local media, and then also Shams over at The Athletic had a really good piece detailing that. But let's start off with the game from last night. The Nets take this one handily. It was much closer in the first half than the final score indicated, but I thought Spencer Dinwiddie really probably played his best game of the season. Finished with 23 points, 7 assists, did have 4 turnovers, and wasn't hitting his 3 ball 0-5 from 3, but he really looked much more decisive, and I think that's when he's at his best, when he's either saying, hey, I'm going to get to the basket, put my head down, not in a way where I'm just kind of tunnel vision, but saying, as opposed to just kind of holding the ball, surveying the court, really making a move that can catch the defense off guard. And I thought his passing in the first quarter, especially, he was very comfortable hitting guys cross court, had a nice pass to Garrett Temple coming off the pick and roll for a three, had 3 successful lob passes, which might be a record for Spencer Dinwiddie, to Jarrett Allen, and Allen had a really nice game, 11 points and 9 rebounds, obviously had that dominant performance against Charlotte, so nice to see him followed up with a solid, consistent game. Obviously, consistency has been a big issue for him, and it seems like Kenny is preaching that to him, and he's responded well. I think only 1 illegal screen, which is also very, very good news for Jarrett Allen, but he was a very good stabilizer for the Nets. But Dinwiddie was the key to this game, going 8 of 10 from the two-point range, doing a really nice job getting to the basket, 7 of 7 from the free throw line, and the Nets needed his consistent scoring. And when you look at who they played, I mean, Sacramento was 6-7 going to the last game. They had been playing well, but if you look at this team, I mean, this is a team that, even though shorthanded, the Nets should beat. No De'Aaron Fox for Sacramento, no Bogdan Bogdanovic, no Marvin Bagley III. I mean, you look at who they were playing. Daquan Jeffries, former Net Yogi Ferrell, played 20 minutes. Wayne Gabriel, someone called Justin James, who I literally never heard of. And I think I know basically every NBA player. I never heard of this guy. And I know he's a second-round rookie out of, I think, Wyoming. But he played 33 minutes last night, and he wasn't bad. He wasn't bad by any stretch. Hit a couple threes. But when someone is playing Justin James 33 minutes, regardless of record, you have to be able to handle that team. And the Nets did that. So I thought they played really well. Obviously got a huge boost from Joe Harris just going insane in the second quarter. Was, I think, knocked down all 5 of his threes in the first half. He was just draining some nice, easy looks that he got off catch and shoots, and then just some tough, contested looks. And he's always been, obviously, he's an incredible three-point shooter. He's more so at his best off the catch when he has some space. He's not a Kyle Korver type that can run off screens, off balance, one leg in the air, and knock those down like Korver and J.J. Redick can. But he was hitting some really tough looks. And especially for the Nets, when they have Dinwiddie at running the starting position, and then the bench ball handling combinations, kind of a smattering of Theo Pinson and John and Musa, you need someone to be able to get hot from three and carry you in those minutes. So whether it be Joe Harris or Torian Prince, who I thought had a terrible game, but we can get to him. They need someone to be able to help them in those minutes, because right now the Nets just don't have the horses to beat good teams. Luckily, they weren't going up against a good team last night, but great to see Joe Harris have that epic performance. And I think his play in the first half gave the Nets enough distance where when they came out in the third quarter, they were feeling good and were able to give themselves a really nice lead, and Sacramento really never made it close. So let's talk about Torian Prince, because his play last night was really frustrating to me. And I think, you know, I feel for him because he's overexposed on this current team right now. He's asked to do more than he would when, even if Kyrie and Caris LeVert were back, or one of them were back. And obviously next year when KD's back, he's going to be in a much more complimentary role where really all he's going to have to do is shoot threes. But the guy is just a black hole on offense. He never passes. There was one play where he pump fake, dribbled in, took a really awkward layup that was contested and had just no chance of going in. And Joe Harris was standing at the wing wide open. And if he had just seen that pass, I mean, that's what separates an okay role player from someone who's very good. And I think that's what Joe Harris is, very good role player. And I think Torian Prince is just an okay player, but a flawed player. And he's really just, at this point, a guy who can really knock down threes, 39% at 6.5 attempts per game. That's amazing. But his inability to hit twos is what's really holding him back. I mean, he's what is he this year from 2-point range? I think he's about 42% on 2-pointers, which for his kind of size and strength is abhorrent. And the reason why is similar to what Rondae Hollis-Jefferson had to do in previous years. He's taking shots that just have no opportunity of going in. So if you're taking these really bad looks, of course your percentages are going to be lower. You have to take shots that you feel comfortable making. And if not, the ball has to keep moving. And I think the ball moved pretty well last night, but ultimately it's going to move better when you don't have ball stoppers in there. And Torian Prince, Kyrie Irving can get away with that. Torian Prince can't. And he had 4 turnovers last night and only 1 assist. And I think he's just someone that doesn't have the ball handling and passing vision that you'd like to see. And then on defense, obviously, he's a flawed player. There was one play where he took a bad shot, missed it, and then was basically trying to go and get the steal and poke it away from the Kings players the whole way down the court, ended up getting out of position on defense, and someone beat him for a layup. And those are the types of plays where you can't let poor mistakes on offense get in the way of your defensive ability. He needs to be someone that can just kind of get down in the stance, be a solid positional defender. They don't need him going for steals. No one's expecting him to be Kawhi Leonard or Paul George, but he needs to be a solid cog in the rotation. And that's what Marcus and I have talked about this year. The Nets are missing those solid positional team defenders like an Ed Davis, a Jared Dudley, or Damari Carroll. None of those guys were spectacular, but when you miss all of them and now you have guys that don't have any discipline on defense, that's why the defense is going to be pretty poor for the Nets, even though they did an okay job last night, even though, I mean, Sacramento was 4 of 26 from 3. So a good portion of that was Nets' solid 3-point defense. Also, a lot of that was luck, but I don't know. They're just kind of venting on Torian Prince. You know, the rest of the guys, I think Shumpert did an okay job. He was active. Pinson and Musa, I think they kind of are what they are. I think Musa is someone that's really going to need to hit shots if he wants to be a consistent player, because he got to the line 8 times last night, but he can't rely on that against better defensive teams because he just doesn't have the athleticism. His handle's still a little loose, and he's not going to be able to beat defenders like that. So he needs to rely on being a more reliable 3-point shooter. And he just hasn't shown that at this point. I think a lot of it's small sample size, nerves, but he's going to really need that if he wants to be a successful rotation player. So especially when the Nets have more of a full deck, even when they get Kyrie back after these next couple games, hopefully he comes back after this Boston game, with Kyrie back in the rotation, saying now you have one kind of core guy on the floor at all times, and Kyrie and Spencer Dinwiddie, you're not going to need Moose as much because he's more... He can sop up possessions and minutes as a lead ball handler just because he's comfortable enough running a pick and roll. But as a complimentary guy, I'd rather have someone like David Nwaba in there, someone who can make things happen with his energy and his defense, rather than Musa, who is an unreliable shooter at this point. And also, if you don't need him handling the ball, he's not really providing a ton of value. So I get why Kenny's leaning more on guys like Pinson and Musa at this point, just because of team need. I think Nwaba is overall a better player, but right now you need guys that can at least have some semblance of ball handling, and Nwaba is just not really that guy. He's more someone that can make energy plays and make stuff happen, but he doesn't have any feel running a pick and roll. He can't bring the ball up, so it's just not going to make a ton of sense there. So let's see if the Nets can build on this. You know, the next two games they have, it's a back-to-back coming up at MSG to play the Knicks, and then going to Cleveland to play the Cavs. So you have to think, even if the Nets have this current roster in place, they have to at least get one of these games. I mean, it's embarrassing if they lose to both the Knicks and the Cavs. And then they have a home-and-home with the Celtics. The first half of that home-and-home in Boston on Thanksgiving Eve will be without Kyrie Irving. Announced last night he's going to miss at least the next three games, making it seven in a row with this shoulder injury. So it's a bit surprising that Kyrie's shoulder injury was kind of a day-to-day thing after that Denver and Utah stretch, but it just seems like at this point doesn't make sense to want to risk him playing hurt. And obviously he is a guy that has propensity for getting injured, so you want to make sure that obviously it's not about the season for the Nets, so that he is ready to go. But obviously, love seeing him out there. He's been spectacular for the Nets this season, even though the team as a whole hasn't performed. So going to be disappointing for him to miss these next few games, where you have to imagine if he was in there for at least these next two against the Knicks and Cavs, the Nets would be overwhelming favorites in both of them. So he'll miss his return to Boston. The Celtics fans will have to wait until I think it's March 3rd to really boo him and give him a piece of their mind. I have one of my roommates is a Celtics fan. He was saying today that Kyrie is a punk and soft for missing these games and think he's faking it. So just more delusional Celtics fans. I don't understand these people. It's just absolutely ridiculous. Do you think Kyrie Irving plotted to miss the first six games of before the Celtics game, so he wouldn't have to play and would have an excuse? It's just absolutely improbable and doesn't make any sense. But I saw also Kendrick Perkins tweeting the same thing. And these people are just delusional. I don't understand them. So, yeah, he'll miss these next few games. Hopefully Dinwiddie can continue his solid stretch, four straight games of putting up 20 points. And even though he's shooting the three ball much worse than expected, only 28% from this year, I don't see anything wrong mechanically with his shot. It might just be a small sample size, because at this point in the season, you know, three or four more makes and his percentage could be upwards of 33 or 34 at this point. So definitely not concerned with him, and love the way he's attacking the basket. And I think overall his free throw attempts and 2-point percentage and assist to turnover ratio is a much better indicator of how he's playing than simply just his 3-point percentage. Okay, so speaking of Dinwiddie's on-the-court play, now let's move to some stuff off the court. But before we do, let's talk about Audible. Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment. Start listening with a 30-day Audible trial. Choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. That sounds good. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA. If you're listening on the go and you can't visit Audible right now, you can find this and all offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. I know I'll be checking out that site and taking advantage of all of the offers that the Locked On Network has going on. A lot of good stuff there to sink your teeth into, including our friends at Audible. So, of course, Dinwiddie has been trying to turn his contract, which he got from the Nets last season, a three-year, $34 million extension with a player option for that third year. This is the first year of that. He's been trying to turn that into an investment vehicle. It is phenomenally forward-thinking. I think it's absolutely incredible what he's doing. Dinwiddie is one of my favorite players to watch on the court, as frustrating as he can be sometimes with wild shots and complaining to the refs. But in terms of all of the stuff he does off the court with the sneaker collection that he's done and now this, he's just one of, I think, the single most like thoughtful, innovative players I've ever seen. And I completely get why he wants to do this. He wants to get that cash in pocket, obviously a little time value of money action. But it's something that's foreign for the league to have a player even, one, think about this. I mean, a lot of players would say, hey, I just got a huge $34 million payday for someone like Dinwiddie's second round pick, was bouncing around the G League for years and with the Bulls and Pistons before really getting a shot from Sean Marks and Kenny and the team. They would just be completely happy with it. But Dinwiddie's not something that we've ever known to just be content and just kind of happy with where he is. He always wants to better his life, the life for his family, his son. So I completely get it. He wants that money in hand, maybe to pursue some other investments that he has in mind, some other projects. So the way that it's happening right now, the NBA has kind of got outside legal counsel to handle these kind of uncharted waters, and they're basically putting their foot down. So it's kind of hit a standstill right now, saying that, listen, if Dinwiddie wants to pursue this further and kind of go to market with this, he could definitely face suspension, termination of his contract, which would be extreme and insane. But this needs to get resolved. And Dinwiddie's someone that is a very headstrong player. The NBA Players Association, if they don't want this for one player, they're certainly not going to want it for any other player that wants to pursue this. So they want to set a precedent and shut this down right now. And a lot of this is coming down to, as Shams reported and Christian Winfield has reported also, former guests on this podcast, it's the player option in that third year, what will be the 2021-2022 season if he does opt into that, or the opportunity to become a free agent in the 2021 summer. That's what's causing the problem right now, because the league is saying that it constitutes gambling and that there could be pressures faced for him to sit out games and just kind of say that he's not going to play, which I get. Let's say the Nets, I don't think this will happen, but in the 2020 next season, they suck. KD comes back and maybe isn't 100%, and Kyrie suffers a big injury, knock on wood. And the Nets are, let's say, 25-38, and there's 9 games left to play, or 19 games left to play. And basically, Dinwiddie says, hey, I'm going out there busting my ass, but I'm about to be a free agent. I'm probably not going to opt in this contract because there's a frothy market for me, and I'm going to be able to give my investors a bigger return than simply the 11 or 12 million bucks I have due next season. So he's just going to say, listen, I'm not going to play right now. I'm not going to play. I'm going to sit out. And there's an incentivization for him to do that, and maybe outside pressures from some of these investors that have invested in this token to tell him not to play. So I get it. And there's always a risk with this. This could happen whether it's just Dinwiddie on his own with no investors or with investors, because guys are saying, hey, I don't want to sit out. I do want to sit out because I don't want to risk getting injured and risking my big payday. It's the same thing that we see time in and time again in college football with guys just either saying I'm not going to play a bowl game because I don't want to risk my draft status and the potential to, let's say, slip a round or two and cost myself millions of dollars. This is an unavoidable risk, and it's surprising that the NBA has really never dealt with this before, with guys just basically saying in the year before a team or player option saying, I don't want to play. They've never dealt with this. I think it would cause a lot of dangerous consequences for the Players Association collective bargaining agreement. But this is a risk that could be faced regardless of whether Dinwiddie has has this securitized contract or not. Maybe you could say now with hundreds or thousands of outside investors pressuring him to not risk his health, that could cause an even bigger groundswell, but this is going to be something that's there regardless. I mean, we've seen it time and time again in college, so it's not like this is a new thing. I think it's going to bring it to the forefront, but ultimately, I don't think that the privatization and making it an investment vehicle of his contract is going to sway him one way or the other almost. It's more so like this will bring it to the forefront, but it's not going to be an issue that would be not there regardless. It's still going to be there, and there could be players a couple years from now who have never thought about making their contract into an investment vehicle, saying, I'm going to sit out now because I don't want to risk my free agency. So it's really interesting. And the way that the league is going to handle this, I think, will be fascinating. I know I'm rambling a bit, but I think Dinwiddie is doing an excellent thing. And it's just a shame that the nature of his contract with that player option in the third year is kind of causing this hold up there and really a stalemate on both sides. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. And I think this is a story that everyone in the NBA and also the business world is going to be following extremely closely. And before we wrap up here, and of course, you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast feed, whether it be Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Himalaya, you name it. Find us there, subscribe, and rate and review at Locked On Nets. Let's talk a little bit about Rodion Skoruks, because he's been sent to the G League now. Also, shout-outs to Timothy Luau-Cabarrot for an awesome night. 35 points last night for the Long Island Nets against Canton. And his three ball looked good, 4-6 from three, and that's always been a big swing skill for him. But this whole Rody Skoruks thing has been just – it's interesting because, obviously, the Nets were able to get him in the second round a couple years ago because Barcelona kind of excommunicated him. And that seems like what's happening here. You know, his play was – has been shoddy to start the season. It sucked. But also, the way that he got yanked from the rotation and stayed out, it's for a player that has a ton of potential, a young guy, and someone who was very key to their success last year, it seems a little bit haphazard. And I think there has to be something going on besides his poor play. And maybe it's related to news that the Nets are hearing regarding the domestic violence incident. And obviously, Skoruks appeared in court earlier this week, and he has another hearing date January 8th, so it's kind of been prolonged, even though they thought there could be a resolution to start the season, so it's still in limbo there, but there has to be something with what they're seeing kind of in practice or his behavior around the team, which is causing them to really yank him and really kind of put him in the doghouse so quickly, because from his just overall talent, his skill set, and his play last year and what he meant to the team last year, there's no way, based on just his play, that the Nets could consider, especially a franchise like the Nets, which is so kind of reliant on player development and takes that as a big part of their identity, could bury him so quickly and put him into the G League. And he's not even playing in the G League. He was supposed to play last night, but didn't. So there has to be something going on here. We'll keep a keen eye out for this, but just wanted to make note of it and bring it to people's attention. That's going to do it for today's show. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. I am at JMBass_, and my beloved co-host Marcus, even though he's not here today, saw some a follow over at Marcus Barahal on Twitter. He's doing a lot of great stuff, and you can, of course, follow his improv comedy career, which is burgeoning. So many shows this guy is doing. But until next time, we'll probably be back in your ears following the Knicks game tomorrow night. Be well.